Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the age of AIDS when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They say, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and then in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school that we conduct here at the law school and on compact disc for adult homeschoolers. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, the business school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. That's easy enough. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, last time we were talking about this thing of AIDS up to 1983. Remember, the first case that's been recorded is in 1959, but as we'll see a little later here, it takes about 10 years. And in some cases, 20 or 30 years, but in most cases, by the time you've been infected, the AIDS is going to become manifest. You're going to have some symptoms within a period of about 10 years. In some cases, it can be as little as a few months. But in most cases, it's about 10 years. So the first guy that came down with AIDS and died from AIDS probably got it about 1949 or 50. 51, 52, something there, died in 1959. Now, he had contact with people, and those people got AIDS. So by the time the CDC picks up on AIDS, on June 5th, 1981, 250,000 people in America have already been infected. They've already got it, and have had it for years. Kind of a silent killer. And probably many of them died and went into their graves and didn't know anything about it. It was misdiagnosed, you know. The guy died of pneumonia. And so that's what the death certificate said. But by 1981, and now we're up to 1983, we're beginning to see some very serious complications. And I pointed out when we finished last time that what you're dealing with here is behavior modification. AIDS is a behavior modification tool used by your creator for the express purpose of getting you to change these high-risk behaviors. Now, I'm just here to deliver a message. I don't care whether you change your behavior or not. It's not no skin off my back. As one old teacher used to tell me, it's no skin off my back. But it could be a lot of skin off of your back. You know, if you come down with AIDS now, that's a death sentence. As we progress along in this report now, which is put out by WGBH Boston Frontline, and you can get a copy of this report free right off the internet. It's www.pbs.org. Just go to pbs.org and then type in WGBH Pages Frontline. Frontline is the name of the program. And I think if you pry around there a little bit, you can get the download on the program. This is the text of the TV special they put on, two-part series. This is the entire text of it. It's a 48-page report, and it'll tell you the history of AIDS from 1959 to 2006. So bring you right up to the minute, and year by year. Now, we're in 1983. The CDC tries to quell fears. You know, this has got to be a very fearful disease. And as fear of the new disease grows, the CDC tries to calm the public in a note in its Morbidity and Morality Weekly Report. And, of course, all of you subscribe to Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report from the CDC, now don't you? If you're like me, I never even heard of it. I don't know what the hell that is. Never saw one. But they reported that the vast majority of these AIDS cases continue to occur among persons in the major identified risk categories. The cause of AIDS is unknown, but it seems most likely to be caused by an agent transmitted by intimate sexual contact through contaminated needles, or less commonly by percutaneous inoculation of infectious blood or blood products, also known as blood transfusions. Did you get that? Percutaneous inoculation of infectious blood or blood products, also known as transfusions, by no evidence suggests per transmission by AIDS by airborne spread. The failure to identify cases among friends, relatives, and co-workers of AIDS patients provides further evidence that casual contact offers little or no risk. All right, casual contact. Well, a little later on, I discovered that your body has 32 body fluids. 32 body fluids. You know, just think about it. Saliva, that's a body fluid. Urine is a body fluid. Semen is a body fluid. Blood is a body fluid. All right, you got 32 of those. If you just went around all of your body and you counted them all up, you'd come up with 32. Now, this AIDS virus has been discovered in all 32 of those body fluids. All 32. Blood, urine, semen, saliva, so on. Now, we discovered that it can be transmitted, this is AIDS, can be transmitted by sexual contact. I guess that's through semen. Well, boys and girls, it's also found in saliva, so don't you think that oral sex by way of saliva might also be a transmission vector? So, I got to thinking about that, and I wasn't the first guy that thought this up, but, you know, I got to thinking about, well, you got a little kid, and you put him in the daycare center, and in the daycare center, there's a little kid in there that's got AIDS. And the little kid with AIDS, he sticks a block in his mouth, and he sucks on it a little while, and he puts it down. And your little kid comes along, he picks up that block, he puts it in his mouth, and he sucks on it for a little while, and he puts it down. And pretty soon, I don't know if you call this casual contact or sexual transmission, or whether you call it, you know, you hang a label on it, do whatever you want. But is this the kind of behavior that you want to participate in? I just thought I'd throw that out for your consideration. Now, I, for one, came to the conclusion many years ago that if I were to follow the quarantine law of the scripture, and you got some guy over here that's got AIDS, you know, this guy is infectious. His body is turning out these AIDS viruses through his body's cells, and he manufactures this. And his body, might be able to take those on, take care of them. In fact, this guy might even be in remission taking this AIDS cocktail drug thingy, but they found out that while it holds it down, it doesn't cure it, it doesn't eliminate it, and once you get AIDS, you've got it for life. And your body is constantly turning out these AIDS viruses. Your body becomes a machine for the recreation of carbon copies of these AIDS viruses, and if somebody else gets it, well then they've got about 8 to 10 years to live, because with all of these cocktails and all of modern science and modern medicine, as of 2006, the average lifespan is 6 to 8 years with the drug cocktail. Now somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, I know a guy that's been on a AIDS cocktail for 15 years. Yeah, I read about it in this report right here. 15 years been on the AIDS cocktail. He started in 1990. And he was the first guy, and we'll read about him in the report, and he's lasted for 15 years. That is amazing. But on average, if you're just an average Joe Sixpack and they put you on this AIDS cocktail, you're going to die in 6 to 8 years. So what that means is that for $16,000 a year and all of the side effects that comes from it, we can give you another 6 years of life with AIDS. Boys and girls, don't you think you could live better without getting AIDS? So if you thought that, well, shucks, I'll just go out and practice all this risky behavior because I think I can avoid AIDS, but if I get it, I've got this AIDS cocktail. I got drugs now. And they got the promise, you know, they tell you they got the promise of a vaccine. Oh my God, you believe that? You think they're going to develop a vaccine just in time for you? Now, I mentioned last time that AIDS was an invention that came from your creator. It was created at least by the sixth day of creation. It's been around for a long time. We just discovered it about 1981. And just because we discovered it about 1981, didn't know about it up until that point in time. You know, there's a lot of things we didn't know about. A lot of things. There's a bunch of things that we don't know about to this day. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, blood donation guidelines have been published. This is 1983 now. In January, the CDC convenes a meeting with blood industry executives, public health officials, and gay and hemophilia activists to talk about how to protect the blood supply. Suggestions to exclude high-risk donors are met with resistance. Oh, my God. Let me pause right here. Met with resistance. I'm going to underline that word resistance. What would you think if I had hepatitis, a blood-borne disease? And we're all sitting around in a circle, and we say, you know, Gordon's got hepatitis over here, and hepatitis is a blood-borne disease, and we don't want to get his hepatitis. We don't think Gordon should donate blood to the common blood supply. And you meet with resistance from me, and I say, wait a minute, I don't want this stigma on me and my reputation and my good name. I want to donate blood just like everybody else. What would you think of that? Kind of stupid, isn't it? I mean, I'm infected with this blood-borne disease, and I say, I want to keep putting my blood into your body, Joe, Sally. Yeah, by the way, how much of my blood do you want? I'm selling it, you know, at a discount. $180 for clean blood. You can have mine for $29.95. You want my contaminated blood? I mean, you know, sometimes when I read this kind of crap, you know, it makes me want to puke. I can hardly believe that somebody would be that crass to say, well, gee, I'm going to resist this. It would seem like to me, yes, ladies and gentlemen, I've got hepatitis, and because of my blood-borne disease, you certainly don't want my blood in the blood supply. In fact, all of us ought to be tested, and any time you find somebody with hepatitis or AIDS or any kind of disease or malady, his blood should be excluded from the blood supply. I mean, doesn't your common sense tell you that? Do you have to go to college for crying out loud? to figure out that contaminated blood isn't good for everybody else. But it met with resistance. The gay activists expressed concern about discrimination and stigma. Oh my God. Discrimination and stigma. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, you should quarantine yourself, boys and girls, so that you don't give this disease to anybody else. While blood industry executives feel that the evidence is weak, that the blood supply is tainted, and don't want to face the financial losses from implementing a new screening policy. Do you get that? Oh, my God. And now along comes business. You know, the Red Cross and doctors and hospitals and all the rest of the businesses. You know, we got a blood supply over here, and it's a stable supply of blood that comes in the hospital. Just picture this. You're running a hospital, and you got a bunch of surgeries. You got 6, 8, 10 operating rooms, and they're busy every day. And maybe you're using 10 pints of blood in 6 operating rooms, you know, 24-7. So, you know, 10 pints of blood times 6 is 60 pints of blood a day, and you're making 180 bucks a pint. Let's take 180 times 60, and, you know, we got 10,800 bucks a day. Times, let's just take 300 days, you know, it's $3,240,000 a year of revenue coming through your hospital. All of a sudden, George Gordon comes along with WGBH and says, oh my God, the blood supply is tainted. We've got AIDS in here that's killing people. Well, wait a minute. Are you worth $3,240,000 bucks? Well, evidently, according to industry executives, you aren't. Because they didn't want to change the protocols or the screening procedures to find these AIDS cases. This is back in 83 now. They didn't want to do that. And they resisted. In fact, they resisted, as I recall, for about 3 years. 3 years. How many people got AIDS in that 3 years while the hospital was making this $3.2 million a year? And multiply this times thousands of hospitals all over America. I mean, you know, it's a big business problem. There's no doubt about it. But don't you think that the people that are going into those hospitals and are going to get this death sentence called AIDS when they get this tainted blood from these gays over here that don't want the discrimination and the stigma because they don't want to change their behavior, it doesn't that affect you and me and everybody else that's going to go to those hospitals? I just throw the thought out for your consideration. Well, it crossed my mind back in the 80s, and I have not been into a hospital, and I would not go to a hospital. If you paid me $3.2 million, I would not go to the hospital. That's a place where people die. That's a place where people get diseased. That's a place where I can see from first-hand observation that the people who run those hospitals do not give a rat's rectum about my health, safety, and welfare, but they are very concerned about the $3.2 million that they are running through their hospital in profit and gain. And I don't blame them. Hey, listen, boys, I don't want to get in the way of your success and happiness and your profits. I just don't want to become one of the victims. I don't want to be one of the gravestones out in the cemetery that had to be piled up in order for you to make those profits. You'll have to make them off of somebody else. That's all. So I just wanted to report to you that hospitals are dangerous places and that the people in those hospitals back in 1983 didn't really care much about your health, safety, and welfare. They were real concerned about money. And the gays who were donating the blood didn't care about your health, safety, and welfare either. They were concerned about discrimination and stigma. Now, I don't want to get AIDS, but if I had AIDS and you came in the room, I would be wearing a mask and I would say, I have AIDS. So you want to stay away from me. Okay, you stay on the other side of the room. And by the way, why don't you pick up that box of gauze mask and why don't you put on a mask so that we don't communicate, so that we don't transmit my disease to you. I should be very concerned about you and your health. I should be very concerned about quarantine. I should be very concerned about keeping my disease to myself and protecting you and your health, safety, and welfare, irrespective of the discrimination and the stigma that's going to be attached to me. Now, that's just my way of thinking. In fact, that's the biblical way of thinking, and that's why God gave us the quarantine law. So in 1983, this doctor, he said, I pounded the table and I yelled at them, asking them how many people they wanted to kill, recalls former CDC epidemiologist Dr. Don Francis. I just said, just tell us the number. You want 10 dead, 20 dead, 100 dead? How many people do you want to kill? Now, those screening guidelines are published in March. Safeguards for the blood supply are not implemented for another 2 years until a blood test is developed after HIV is identified. In the meantime, 35,000 Americans become infected from contaminated blood and blood products. Now, the gay community, boys and girls, and the hospital administrators killed 35,000 people in 1983 and 1984 because they didn't want this blood screening process. 35,000. They got a number that they put right on it. Now, I want to point out to you that in Leviticus 3, verse 17, remember I told you that in the last program, these screening procedures, had they been implemented by Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, we'd have saved 35,000 Americans. But if those 35,000 Americans had been practicing Leviticus 3:17, it could have saved themselves. I did. You won't catch me going to the hospital. You won't catch me taking a blood transfusion. Now somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, what are you going to do? Well, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and I'm not here to tell you what the solution to the blood transfusion problem is. Not today, not in this program, but there is a solution to it. I know what it is. I've been practicing it all my life, and I know of thousands of other people that practice it. God gave it to us at Mount Sinai. It's been around for 3,000 years. The solution to the blood transfusion problem has been around for 3,000 years. Just because you don't know what the hell it is doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Does it? Well, Kent Hovind one time, he was talking to some guy, you know, some pimply-faced punk, and this punk got a little bit up in his face, and he said, I think that you're full of it, Hovind. Hovind's a pretty level-headed guy, and he said, Son, do you know everything that there is to know? And the kid thought about it for a second, and he said, well, no. And Hovind said, well, do you know half of everything that there is to know? And the kid said, well, no, I probably don't know half of everything there is to know. And then Hovind dropped a bomb on him, and he said, well, son, could it be that what I'm telling you today is a part of that one half of everything that there is to know in the world that you've never heard of? Hey, kids, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there to know. And just because you don't know it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And that's what we're dealing with here. You know, now God comes along and he says, now don't eat blood. Now, I don't think you have to be a real mental giant to figure out that if you shouldn't eat it, you probably shouldn't inject it. And, you know, my common sense says that, you know, if I shouldn't be eating this stuff, I probably shouldn't be sticking it into a syringe and sticking it into my veins. Should I? Does that make any sense? Would you say, oh, I wouldn't eat blood sausage because that's bad for me. God told me don't eat it. But I'll take the same blood out of the same pig, stick it in a syringe, and stick it up in my veins. Wouldn't you say that's kind of stupid? My common sense tells me that it is. Not just me, I guess. In March, we're back in 1983 now. In March of 1983, former Representative Margaret Heckler, Republican of Massachusetts, became President Reagan's Secretary of Health and Human Services. She tells Frontline that AIDS was her number one priority, but that she believed increasing the budgets of the public health organizations responding to the crisis was unnecessary. Throwing money at the problem was exactly the kind of philosophy that President Reagan would have hated and was not authorizing. And she explains, we were placing the emphasis on those who could provide the answers in a peculiar case. This was not a problem that money could solve. It was a problem that the scientists could solve, and no one had to balance the various segments of the AIDS. And so one had to. Let me reread that. So a person had to balance these various segments of the AIDS dilemma. Now I want to make a little comment here. 23 years later, now this is Margaret Heckler now in the year 1983, and she says money, throwing money at the AIDS problem isn't going to solve it. She says it was a problem that scientists could solve. Well, boys and girls, 23 years later, have scientists solved the AIDS problem? Let's take a look at it. In 1981, there's about 250,000 people that have AIDS in the United States. In 1959, so far as we know, there's only one. Obviously, there had to be more than one, but then we only know of one. Now, if you take geometric progression, just test this. Just try it. And let's start out about 1981. And let's start off with the first AIDS case. And let's just use 81 as our starting point. And then let's double 1 to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 32, 64. Today, boys and girls, there are 40 million people in the world that have AIDS. 40 million. 30 million have already died. So that's a total of 70 million people that have AIDS or have had past tense AIDS and died from it. There's a handful of survivors that have had AIDS for longer than 10 years. I say a handful, I don't know if it's 100 worldwide. Hell, there might be 1,000, I don't know. But there is a handful. I read an article here not long ago of 9 people that they were monitoring down in New Zealand that had had AIDS for 10 years. And they just, or HIV for 10 years, and hadn't developed full-blown AIDS. And a guy by the name of Magic Johnson, we'll read about him a little later on, he got AIDS, and he's still alive. And he's treating his AIDS holistically. He didn't go with drugs and chemicals and one thing and another. The guy's still alive. As far as I know, he's getting along fine. And he has been treated like a pariah. Nobody wants to listen to Magic Johnson. He wanted to tell people, here's what I did. I went out and I got AIDS with my risky behavior. But I saw the light and repented. And now I want to tell people, here's how you deal with it and here's how you treat it. And the medical community shuns him like he was an Amish guy that left the faith. I mean shunned. I just thought I'd throw that out for your consideration. Now, there's a cure for AIDS. I mean, there's a cure for cancer, there's a cure for AIDS, and you can avail yourself of it. But it isn't going to come from drugs, practicing witchcraft, and modern science. And this Margaret Heckler said now the scientists could solve it. And I'm here to tell you, 23 years later, the problem is worse today than it was in 1983. Worse today. Now let's take a little geometric progression. If you take 1 and multiply it to 2, you know, just 1 and 1 is 2. Now take 2 and multiply it to 4. 2 and 2 is 4. Then take 4, multiply that to 8. 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. That's called geometric progression. Do that 32 times. On the 32nd throw of the dice, it equals 40 million. If AIDS doubles every year, and you do that for 32 years, it'll total 40 million. And that's where we're at today. AIDS is doubling about every year. Now, as you're climbing up this steep geometric progression, there comes a point in time when it will level off. And it won't double every year, it'll double every 2 years. And then it won't double every 2 years, it'll double every 4 years, but it's still doubling. And at some point in time, boys and girls, everybody on planet Earth is going to be infected. Well, everybody's going to be infected that practices these risky behaviors. Now, there's about 5 or 6. As we progress along, I'm going to identify these risky behaviors. Witchcraft, that's a risky behavior. Homosexual behavior, that's a risky behavior. Blood transfusions, risky behavior. Adultery, risky behavior. Ladies, if your husband's a truck driver or an airline pilot, and he's out here dinking around with the stewardesses or the lot lizards, then there's a possibility that he's going to get infected and come home and give it to you. Now, boys, you know, you think about your wife. Now, maybe she is an old hag, and maybe she's a nasty a wife or something, and you really don't care. You know, that's a possibility. But, you know, assuming that you like your wife and she's not a bad woman and she cooks and sews and does all those things for you, do you really want to bring home a fatal disease and kill her? Because AIDS, boys, is just as fatal as sticking a gun to her temple and pulling the trigger. Just as fatal. In fact, you'd be doing your wife a favor if you shot her in the head and killed her, because that's like putting an animal out of its misery. This AIDS is a bad way to go. It's a bad way to die. You're not going to have fun dying from AIDS. And again, when God designed this, he didn't design it, you know, so that you'd check out, you know, with a flare. He designed it so that you'd die hard, so that you could leave an example for the rest of us to follow. Now, I've been watching these AIDS people, and I came to the conclusion I don't want that. So I'm going to do everything in my power to avoid AIDS, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, I'm going to avoid it. So I'm going to avoid transfusions. I'm going to avoid homosexual behavior. And I'm going to avoid lot lizards and whores and adultery and the high-risk categories. Now, somebody comes along and says, you can use a condom. Excuse me. Let's go into Flo's Whorehouse. You sit down on the couch, somebody brings you a drink, and you're sitting here looking at the girls. Now, just put yourself in the picture. You're at Mustang Ranch, boys. And we're sitting here, we're looking at the girls, sipping on our margarita or Jack Daniels on the rocks. And we're going to select a girl. Okay? So you select that one over there, and I'll select this one over here. And the two girls come over, and we say, now, girls, do you have any communicable diseases? And girl number one, that's your girl, Bob, she says, I have gonorrhea, but it's in remission. And I'm on antibiotics. And, you know, I'm probably pretty clean. And my girl, she says, I've got AIDS. I've got AIDS. And I'm on the AIDS cocktail, and it's in a pretty good remission, and I've had it for 4 or 5 years, and I'm feeling pretty good. Got that, Bob? My girl's got AIDS. Yours has got gonorrhea. Maybe a third girl over there, Charlie, maybe she's got hepatitis. Now, boys, which one of these girls do you want to sleep with tonight? I mean, you know, come on, kids. These are choices that we have to make in life. Now, the reality of it is that these girls aren't going to come over and explain to you, well, gee, I've got hepatitis, gee, I've got gonorrhea, gee, I've got AIDS. They're never going to admit to it. They would deny it. Because anybody in his right mind, anybody with an IQ above 80, for crying out loud, would say, let me get the hell out of here. Now, these girls are going to say, well, I'm just as clean as a hound's tooth, and, you know, let's go get after it. But that's not where reality is, kids. That's just not where reality's at. Now, the gonorrhea thing, you know, you can cure that with antibiotics. And the hepatitis thing, you know, we got some drugs for that. But this AIDS thing over here, kids, there isn't any cure. And with the AIDS drug cocktails, all that means is that you're going to die, but you're going to die after you spend $16,000 a year. It's the pharmaceutical industry's hot new item for sale. Let's just test this. $16,000 for 8 years. And how much is that? Times 8. 96? No, it's $128,000. Try that again. 16 times 8. $128,000. So from the time you get AIDS, the pharmaceutical industry is going to rake in approximately $100,000 to $130,000 here in America. And while I'm on the subject of price, did you know that Bill Clinton is working on AIDS? And you know where he gets his AIDS drugs? He gets them from India. Because in India, they got the cost down to $800 a year per patient. You see, people that are over in Rwanda and Botswana land and Thailand, they don't have 16 grand a year to blow on drugs. So they had to come up with a better solution. So they couldn't buy the drugs, AIDS cocktail, you know, here in America. They had to go to India. So they got it in India for $800. Well, in this report, they now got the cost down to $275 a year. So here you are in the United States of America spending $16,000 a year for these drugs. Let's divide that by 275, shall we? And the markup is 58.18. That's 58 keystones in the drug cocktails they're selling here in the United States. Do you know what that means, kids? 58 keystones. A keystone is where you take the price of a product and you double it. My wife calls it the 2% principle. You know, you buy it for a dollar and sell it for two, and you make it on the 2%. It's called a keystone. You buy this motorcycle, this product, for $1,000, and you sell it for $2,000. I mean, some of you people, you know, when I tell you I buy this for a dollar and I sell it for $2, I bought it for $500 and I sold it for $1,000, would say, my God, that's price gouging. I was watching TV the other day, and Exxon, They're making $36 billion a year, and they paid their CEO $400 million. People are just incensed at the profits that Exxon is making. Absolutely incensed. So I did a little arithmetic. Here's what it is. If you take a look at the Exxon people over here, they're spending $1.66 a gallon for crude. Oil is $70 a barrel. There's 42 gallons in a barrel. When you divide it out, it's $1.66 a gallon. That's what Exxon has to pay to the Sheikh of Araby to get a gallon of crude oil into his refinery. Then he has to pay 60 cents to refine it, transport it, and make his profit of 21 cents off of a $3 gallon of gasoline. The government gets 54 cents and the oil company gets 21 cents. So while you're real upset with the oil company, keep in mind that the government gets 2.5 times more net profit off of a gallon of gasoline than the oil company. The oil company gets 21 cents profit, government gets 54 cents in taxes. The government does absolutely nothing. Nothing to produce a gallon of gasoline. Not a dime. Not a nickel. Not a penny. And the price of gas is $3.01 a gallon. And you people are just up in arms about that. Well, watch this. If you want to know how much the drug companies are making, assuming that they're selling this stuff at cost, $275, let's assume that that's your cost. Here in the United States, they're selling it to you for $16,000. That's 58 times more than it costs. That's a hell of a lot more than Exxon's doing to you, and you're mad as hell about gas prices, aren't you? I never heard of anybody getting mad at Pfizer or Merck. Have you? I was talking to a guy the other day, and he said, hell, you know, you people are coming in here, I'm bitching about the price of gas at $3 a gallon, but you pay $9 a gallon for the water that you buy out of the cooler and go out and jump in your car and drive down the road drinking $9 a gallon water that you could get free over there out of the faucet. You're not complaining about the price of water, are you? I think Americans have their heads straight up their rectal regions, you know, if you stop and think about it. Let me give you the numbers here. If you were to take a product like Sudafed, you know the stuff that's the raw ingredient for methamphetamine? Do you know what that stuff costs? Do you know where it's made? It's made in India. There's three companies, three manufacturing plants, and they're all located in India, that make that Sudafed chemical. And it's $1,200 a ton. So Merck goes to India and pays $1,200 for a ton of that stuff. Do you know how much that is a pound? 60 cents a pound. Do you know how much that is an ounce? 4 cents an ounce. Do you know how much that is per penny? Well, you get 7 grams for a penny. So Merck gets 7 grams of this product that's used in this methamphetamine for a penny. Do you know what they sell that for? $6 a gram. Just go into the drugstore and buy some Sudafed. Go into the drugstore and buy some over-the-counter cold medicine. You're paying $6 a gram for the pills that you're taking. For crying out loud, that cost 7 grams for a penny. The cost of the ingredients that go into these drugs, kids, is inconsequential. And the drug companies, they come to you and say, well, you've got to pay for all of this research. No, wait a minute. Research? No. The drug companies don't pay for the research. It's the taxpayers that pay for the research. I'll show you that as we progress along in our report. So here you are, the taxpayer, paying for the research. The research then is given to the pharmaceutical companies, and they go out and they pay an inconsequential amount and then sell it to you. For $6 a gram, they get 7 grams for a penny and sell it to you for $42. What costs the drug company a penny they sell for $42 and you're bitching about the price of gas? Oh my God. Hey, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The law, our website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The law hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and the publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by us here at the Law Hour, an editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, however, are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about AIDS. Guess I ought to give you a plug here for the source of the information. This comes from the Frontline program on AIDS, the age of AIDS, and you can get a free copy of this right off the webpage, www.pbs.org/wgbh/pages-frontline/AIDS and so on. I think if you just went to pbs.org, WGBH Frontline, I think you'll get to their webpage and then just start clicking around. I think you'll find this report, and it's called The Age of AIDS. It's a 48-page report. The scientists, boys and girls, have not solved the AIDS problem in 23 years, and if they work on it for 123 years into the future, they're still not going to have a solution to it. And that's because the scientific modality or methodology is not conducive to solving the problem. The AIDS problem is a behavioral problem. It's a legal problem. And it needs to be solved as a matter of law. And it's a behavioral modification in the same way that you change people's driving behavior by fines and suspensions and making lives a damn miserable for them that they just comply with the law because it's easier than not complying. Not because they want to. It's because it's easier than not. Same thing is true here with adultery. It just becomes easier to comply with the thou shalt not commit adultery law than it is to violate the law. And the ultimate end to the violation is death. I mean, that's just where the bottom line is. I explained that to you last time. I said, now listen, you can violate physical law. But when you do, you run a risk. And if you run the risk too often, at some point in time, it'll kill you. And then, of course, that solves the problem. That changes your behavior. It changes the behavior in you. You will not break that law anymore when you're dead. And if death is what it takes to get you to change your behavior, then so be it. Now, the Denver Principle is published. This is back in 1983. A nonprofit advocacy group, the National Association of People with AIDS, released a mission statement calling for a humane response to the crisis. We condemn attempts to label us as victims, a term which implies defeat. And we're only occasionally patients, a term which implies passivity, helplessness, and dependence upon the care of others. We are people with AIDS. The statement includes a list of recommendations for health care providers and others on how to treat people with AIDS. The list becomes known as the Denver Principles. AIDS Medical Foundation was formed in 1983. The foundation to spur coordination and educational outreach among the medical community. The group is formed by Dr. Matilda Krim, a cancer researcher at New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. It is the precursor to the American Foundation for AIDS Research, which is founded 2 years later. In 1983, we came to 1,112 and counting, the gay activist and co-founder of Gay Men's Health Crisis, Larry Kramer, writes a seminal article on the new disease killing gay men. It appears in the New York Native, a gay newspaper. If this article doesn't scare the S out of you, then we're in real trouble, he begins. If this article doesn't rouse you to anger, fury, rage, and action, gay men may have no future on this earth. Our continued existence depends on just how angry you can get. Hey, this guy's right on. Hey, this guy's right. When he says gay men may have no future on this earth, he isn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. That's the correct conclusion. And your Creator told you that. He said the penalty for gay practice called sodomy is death. Now the statute calls for us to stone these gays to death. But it isn't a requirement. Children, we don't have to go out and do diddly jack squat to anybody who's gay. They'll do it to themselves. All you got to do is sit back and relax and enjoy the ride. You know, the average lifespan of sodomites is 45 years unless they get AIDS, in which case then the average drops to 39. Now, the average lifespan of those people who practice thou shalt not commit adultery is 75 years, a little bit longer than the 70 years guaranteed under the old covenant contract negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, which is 25,550 days, 70 years. So the guy hit the nail on the head. If you're a gay activist, you know, you don't have any future on this planet. That's where life is. And that's why God wanted you to change your behavior. That's why he gave you AIDS, hepatitis, gonorrhea, syphilis. It's to scare the hell out of you. It's to make you hear and fear. And in many cases, these people are incorrigible. They simply say, I'm not going to change my behavior. Okay. Don't get mad at me. I'm a reporter. I'm just here to tell you that if you don't change your behavior, you're not going to live to be 70 years old. You're going to die. And you're going to die on average at age 45, which is about 30 years less than you would live if you practiced thou shalt not commit adultery. The choice is yours. I'm not here to preach at you. I'm just telling you that those are the facts. And you can get that right off of the numbers that we're getting out of the Frontline report. Now there are international implications. Representatives gathered at the World Health Organization back in 1983, their headquarters in Geneva, for the first meeting to discuss the international implications of this new disease. And by this point, AIDS has been found in several dozen countries. Delegates from the Soviet Union insist that AIDS will not be found within the Eastern Bloc. Much of the conversation centers around the blood supply, as several European countries had already banned importing blood or blood products from the United States. Then in 1983, there was a study in Zaire, hearing about Congolese patients coming to Belgium for treatment. The CDC epidemiologist Dr. Joseph McCormick realizes the problem may be more extensive there in Zaire than anyone realizes. So he heads a team, which includes Dr. Peter Pio, that travels to Kinshasa for a six-week study and confirms infection in 38 patients, some of whom are severely ill, indicating that they are in an advanced stage of infection. The team's major discovery is that there is an equal number of infections in women and men, further evidence that the disease could be heterosexually transmitted, and this changed the landscape of AIDS forever, because this showed us that everybody, male and female, was susceptible to AIDS, McCormick explains. This was not something special to people who practiced a gay lifestyle. This was something that could affect anyone. Now, if you'll take a look at Revelation chapter 6, you boys and girls, you're going to find that these are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, of which disease kills one-fourth. Now, if we got 6 billion people in the world and you take a fourth, that's 1.5 billion, isn't it? And then in Exodus 15, verse 26, God says he's our healer, and then I said I was going to look this up, and I didn't, so let's see if I pick a little note to myself. And that is that these diseases, the diseases that are laid upon us by God, and it's a punishment. And it's here in Deuteronomy chapter 28, but I couldn't see it off the top of my head. And if you obey his commandments, he says, he's not going to lay any of these diseases upon you. And I can't see it off the top of my head, but I'll look that up and I'll report it to you next time. So I'm going to make a little note here to myself right here on the air, and I'll tell you. The moral of the story, that concludes 1983, and then 1984 they came up with a blood test. Now we can test you and we can find out if you got AIDS. I've never had an AIDS blood test. I don't know if I've got AIDS or not. And I'm not going to go get a blood test. I'm not going to practice any of the risky behaviors. I haven't yet, and I don't intend to start. And I think I can live my life to age 70. I'm 3 years away now. To age 70, and that's my contracted 70 years. And then if I'm strong, I could live to be 80. That's a guarantee, by the way. You know, I'm pretty strong, so I might live to be 80 years old practicing this Mosaic Law. If you're not practicing the Mosaic Law, you're probably not going to make it to age 70. Probably not to age 80. But that's a choice that you have to make. When I was a kid, you know, we used to talk about coffin nails. You know, we'd pass cigarettes around. Here, have a coffin nail. Knowing full well that cigarettes would reduce your lifespan. And I forgot what the numbers were. Now, they actually worked that out one time. If you're a smoker, every time you smoke a cigarette, you reduce your lifespan by 5 minutes or 10 minutes, something like that. Well, you know, if you're smoking a pack a day and you reduce your lifespan by 5 minutes and there's 20 cigarettes in a package, that's 100 minutes a day, isn't it? So if you take 100 times 365, that's 36,500 minutes divided by 60 is 608 hours off of your lifespan every year from smoking. And I remember as a kid, I used to smoke. You know, I smoked cigarettes. And I would kind of kid somebody and say, here, I have a coffin now, and passing out cigarettes. I'm going to light up another coffin nail, we call them. Cigarettes were called coffin nails. Now, if you want to practice sodomy, well, then you add to the risk. If you want to take blood transfusions, if you want to practice intravenous drug practice, which is witchcraft, prohibited in the scripture, by the way, each one of these behaviors over here is a risk factor. Scientists come along and say, well, why don't you wear a condom? Go ahead and have sex with that woman, but wear a condom just to be safe. Who in his right mind would have sex with a woman that he knew had AIDS? So what they're saying is, well, go out and experiment. You're not going to have somebody admit that they've got AIDS, but wear a condom anyway. Wouldn't you be better off to practice thou shalt not commit adultery, practice heterosexual sex with your wife without any of the risk factors involved, and you won't get AIDS at all? You won't get AIDS at all. Now, somebody comes along and says, well, that's not practical because you've got all these people out here who aren't going to do that. Well, okay. Well, you've got a God out here that says he's prepared to kill everybody that doesn't practice thou shalt not commit adultery. If it requires killing everybody on planet Earth except for those that practice that law, if that's what it takes, that's what he's prepared to do. Did you know that? And there was a time in the past when he was prepared to kill everybody on planet Earth that wouldn't practice that law. And he did. He sent a flood and killed everybody but eight. There was only eight people practicing that law. And if that's what it took to accomplish that goal, he said, well, that's what we're going to do. Now we're approaching what's called the Great Tribulation. And it's described in the book of Revelation, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And we're down to this point in time when we've got this infectious disease laid upon us, growing by geometric progression, which is now a world pandemic on the same order as bubonic plague, children. Now, do you want to place your faith and your trust in medical science that for 23 years has told you to wear a condom? Or would you rather place your confidence in a law that says thou shalt not commit adultery? There's your choice. Hey, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the internet. If you'd like more information, the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about the age of AIDS, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.